Welcome to Our Thoughts Tonight. Join us as we chat in a mellow mood about music, philosophy, psychology, and anything else that will come to mind. Enjoy!
Our Thoughts Tonight. We are here today, again, Wednesday night. Zach is here.
Hello.
Sean is here.
Hello.
And Ashik is not here. He's going to be taking a short break from the podcast. I'm sure he'll be back soon. We're going to cover whatever comes to mind today. We also are lacking a subject, but we can always talk about the election since it's still happening. But as always, we're going to start tonight off with our favorite tune to open the night with, Crucem Sanctam.
Crucem Sanctam Subit, qui
tonight. Here we are. How's everyone doing tonight?
Pretty good.
Fine. Doing good?
Yeah.
The election is happening.
Yeah, I know.
Everyone is
on edge.
The election is pending.
Yeah. I think officially, some places aren't calling Arizona yet. As far as I know, I think it's 263 to 214.
Yeah.
Has any election lasted this long to decide?
I don't know, actually. I was wondering that earlier, but I haven't really looked.
Didn't you say earlier that it was like the highest, numbers for voters ever?
Yeah, this is the highest voter turnout of all the United States elections. So that makes Joe Biden, he has acquired the most votes in the history
thus far
of an election.
Yeah.
And he might not even win.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Well, there's an outside chance he might not win.
Yeah, there's a, I think, 9-3 chance in terms of like mathematical outcomes.
Well, I sure hope he does win.
Yeah.
You know, it astounds me that even just on judging a person, never mind political stance, but just on judging a person, that you would want a person with a character like Donald Trump as president, who has consistently lied, cheated on his taxes, had affairs. I mean, just by all accounts, and I'm going to use a really strong word, an abominable human being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and just on that level, why would you vote for such a person?
Yeah, I wonder, like, I don't really say that. I mean, I feel like in my personal life, I experience, you know, anger towards certain people if they've done something I perceived as horrible. But even then, it's rare, and I'm hesitant to say I hate that person or that person. I hesitate to say that person is an awful person because I don't believe that people are awful. I feel that they just do awful things. But I can honestly say that I think that Donald Trump is an awful person.
Yeah.
Well, you know, on top of what I said, he's a racist.
Yeah.
He promotes violence. By all accounts, a nasty guy.
Definitely. Yeah. And.
So
yeah, there's just so much confusion surrounding the
election.
It's astounding to me that people look at this guy and think that he's the answer. He's the one.
I think the only reason why they think though is because he's an outsider and he's not like an actual politician who's been in office for however long, like Joe Biden or something. And not only that, but besides the point that he's not a great person and all this, he was a celebrity, which shows, and has a lot of money. And because he has a lot of money, people that don't do the research about the person while he's in office or while he's not in office before he was elected, they just see him as, like, different, and they want different. So they're just going for it and completely, like, have horse blinders on and just seeing the end goal, the end game, not all the bullshit and lies and stuff that he spews out.
Yeah. That's, well, they don't even look to see if it is lies. They just believe whatever he'll say.
Or whatever Fox News says.
And I don't understand that rationale that when people say, but he was never a politician, he was a businessman.
Yeah.
Most politicians, when they're not in office currently, tend to go to corporations and their CEOs or, you know, they manage massive corporations in the private sector. So they are businessmen too.
Yeah.
Politician and businessman they're pretty much the same thing. And then you can throw in lawyers there too. Lawyers tend to be politicians. Yeah. So I just don't understand why people say that. And he's not even that great of a businessman.
No, he's not. He inherited money.
Yeah.
And he lost a lot of money.
And he lost a lot of it. He inherited from his father.
It's really crazy. Anyway,
do you think it then has something to do with the admiration of money?
With the
coarse admiration of money.
In the public?
Yeah, as far as Trump is concerned.
I think so, yeah. I think like what we were talking about before we started the show, like make America great again. What does great in what way? And I think if you were to ask Donald Trump or his followers what does great mean, they would say, you know, they would most likely lead to something with prosperity in mind. And to me, it's not just like, oh, we're well off and can help people all in an altruistic way with money. It's no. When America is great, we have as much money as we can possibly have. It's just great means greed in that context.
I think it also means something else. I think it means military clout.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it, for him, great means being a bully militarily.
Yeah.
Or the ability to be a bully.
Yeah,
definitely. I can't really jive with it. I don't know what's going to happen, though. I mean, there's still time. So we can't be saying goodbye just yet, I don't think.
No.
So what's going on in your life, Zach, in the past week?
Reading, playing video games, watching the news like consistently.
Yeah. What are you reading?
What?
What are you reading?
Oh, the books that he gave me, Merlin and The Sword in the Stone.
Right on.
Yeah.
How are you liking it?
It's good. I like it a lot.
Cool.
I'm like one chapter in.
Right on.
I don't know, man. I've been watching a lot of. I can honestly say that I've watched more politics, more news than I have in my whole entire life in this 1 year.
Yeah, people are treating it like, you know, sports kind of took a break.
Yeah.
For your current, this is a new sport. I mean, sports haven't even really caught on again since, you know, the pandemic.
Yeah. And if there is sports, you got to take like 4 corona tests and then go to some island or something. Like MMA and stuff. They're testing over and over and flying around, and then they get to an island and then they test again before a fight, and then after they're done fighting, they test again.
At least they're smart about it.
Yeah, but still. But then no one really knows about it unless people are interested in it.
You know, my younger sister made a comment to me the other night. Sarah is very much vested in politics. She's actually on the phone a lot to make sure that people who have mailed their votes in make sure that their votes are going to be validated. So she actually has this list that people actually forget to sign their mail-in votes. So she has a list to call these people and tell them, by the way, do you know that your ballot will not be counted because you didn't sign it? So they can go in, but they can go in and correct that.
Really?
Right. Yeah. They can go in and correct that.
Has she had success?
She's made lots and lots of phone calls, but she's that, you know, she's that devoted to having Biden elected.
Yeah, no, right? I think it's absolutely necessary. And I said last week that I didn't want to turn this into a political podcast, but it's just so hard not to because it's just, it is really, I mean, the trajectory of everything could change one way or another.
Well, maybe we can leave politics with a hopeful thought, okay? I actually have a poem that addresses this, but also Sarah also made a comment to me, which I think is very astute. She said, you know, if Biden gets elected, we won't hear about the president every day.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
Yeah. Or I hope so, at least.
Right, because if the president's doing a good job, you just don't hear about it,
mm-hmm.
right?
No, you only hear about like meetings and
every
like,
now
stuff
and then.
That he does every now and then, yeah.
And Biden doesn't strike, I think, people, or he hasn't done it yet, as a person who's tweeting constantly.
Not in any inflammatory way.
Certainly not inflammatory, and certainly not dishonest way.
Want to hear something funny?
Yeah.
So, like, you know how you just said, oh, I don't want to, I didn't, last week I said I don't want to get too much into politics.
Yeah.
So, like, when I got off work, I went to play my game because I was watching politics all day, right? And it's an MMO where it's, like, people all around the world are on this game, right? And it doesn't matter what it is. Anyway, so I'm playing, and there's, like, a message section in the left.
Right.
And it's as, like, Trump was giving his speech last night.
Uh-huh.
And then left and right, like, under each other, it's nothing but political, like Trump people and Joe Biden like bashing on each other.
Uh-huh.
And then there's one guy out of the 50 kids or 50 people that are like, hey man, this is my fantasy land, can you guys take that trash out of here? I've been watching politics all day, but I don't want to be in here. This is my escapee, but
and we certainly need that.
Yeah, I thought it was really crazy and ridiculous that like it's so toxic that it goes everywhere.
Right. So can I read a poem?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so this is from In Memoriam by Alfred Lord Tennyson. He was a poet laureate of England. He was born in 1809 and he died in 1892. This In Memoriam was actually written for a young man who was going to become Tennyson's brother-in-law, and he was very close to him, but he died at an extremely young age before marrying Tennyson's sister. And In Memoriam consists of almost 150 relatively short poems. But I think this one applies to this election as it's still pending. And the title is, "O Yet We Trust." O yet we trust that somehow good will be the final goal of ill. To pangs of nature, sins of will, defects of doubt, and taints of blood. That nothing walks with aimless feet, that not one life shall be destroyed or cast as rubbish to the void when God hath made the pile complete. That not a worm is cloven in vain, that not a moth with vain desire is shriveled in a fruitless fire or but subserves another's gain. Behold, we know not anything. I can but trust that good shall fall at last, far off, at last, to all, and every winter change to spring. So runs my dream, but what am I? An infant crying in the night, an infant crying for the light, with no language but a cry.
Wow. Who was that by?
Alfred Lord Tennyson.
What year is that?
It would have been written about 1850, I believe.
Wow. Profound.
I think applicable.
Definitely. All right. Yeah, that really hit the spot of the emotion that we're trying to convey.
Knocked it
I guess.
Out of the park.
Yeah. So I think let's cut to a short piece and come back and continue on. So, we've got a question here. What was your question, Zach?
When was
or
the
Sean,
last...
whoever asked? I can't remember who it was that said it, but...
When was the last time that America was actually great?
Yes.
Yeah.
When was America actually great last?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. I'll find you the answer for that. It was before the last 4 years at some point.
Well, that narrows it down.
Or maybe tomorrow.
Yeah. 1980s.
Yeah. You said 1980s, right?
Yeah.
What? For what reason?
Good music. I don't know. I don't think there was war going on at that time. It wasn't as crazy. But then again, I wasn't even born yet, so...
In the 1980s,
yeah.
There was no war, as far as I know, until, like, the 90s, there was.
Yeah. But not in 1980s. It seemed chill.
Yeah.
Good
well,
music.
As far as I know.
Well, maybe we should backtrack and try to define what... I mean, Trump uses the phrase...
Great.
Let's make America great again. So why does he think it's not great now? And how does he define great? Or how do we perceive... Because he's never really said what he thinks that great is.
Yeah, exactly.
So what is our perception of his idea of great?
Okay. Well, I think the whole statement from the get-go is kind of a retaliation to... A racist retaliation to Obama's 8 years prior. Because, you know, he's essentially saying... And he's not just critical of the Obama administration, but even the Bush administration, but obviously more so Obama. He's saying that during the 8 years that Obama's administration was in office, that it somehow wasn't great. And if he agrees the same situation with Bush, that would mean during the Clinton years it might have been great,
yeah.
Which I personally think it was, even though I didn't really understand economics back then.
Yeah, me neither.
But it seemed like things were less paranoid, at least at the time.
Yeah.
Well, maybe he's so against Obama, certainly for racist reasons, but we have to remember also Obama, I don't think he controlled both houses, you know, the Senate and the House, and they often fought back at him, preventing certain laws from taking effect.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems to me kind of a petty, racist idea of that Obama's administration was not great.
Yeah, I think it was great.
During Obama, right?
Yeah, it gave people like health care and he took care of people. And he wasn't like, he was well-spoken and like a lot of people liked him. There was not as much conflict. There was still conflict. There was like tragedies and stuff like school shootings and whatnot and like the whole... people being spied on from, who were they?
The NSA.
Yeah, there's stuff like that, but like nothing is like dramatic now. And I think this is the worst time to have like a celebrity as a president when there's a virus going on.
Yeah.
But the whole making America great again, that's just like a rude nudge towards basically anyone that's been president before.
So what do you think his idea of great is? Like Sean said,
wealth.
Like wealth without...
The more money
without
you have, the greater you are.
And
billions
outsiders.
And billions. All he talks about is stock market, how everyone's got good jobs, and how much money he has, and how much money he's paid on his taxes, which is like $700.
I would also include racism in that.
Yeah, and racism.
Yeah, the minority... the minorities aren't... put up on a bill in his perfect world, you know, like...
Or immigrants, for that matter.
What's that?
Or immigrants.
Yeah,
immigrants, yeah.
He's like, if you're poor, sucks to suck. I'm rich.
Yeah. Yeah. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate.
And there's an incredible irony there because it's a lot of that poor that got him elected.
Yeah. That's the thing, too. That's what I don't understand. That's the conundrum in my head that I don't understand is like the poor people that he's like essentially like.
Yeah, that's
bad mouthing are the people that are writing Trump 2020 on the sidewalk. And like, I'm like, what's going on?
It's really crazy that. I mean, it's not crazy because it But if I sit here and I look at the election map right now, I'm going to pull it up so I'm not misinforming anybody. What's that? Yeah. Okay. So I'm looking at the election map right now. Give me a state, any state.
Nebraska.
Okay. So Nebraska, the big cities in Nebraska, in the middle of literally in the middle, you picked a good example, in the middle of the United States.
Or the middle of the continuous 48.
Yeah.
Right.
There is Lincoln and Omaha that are Democratic, that voted Democrat. The rest of the city, or the rest of the state, surrounded by pretty much nothingness, is all Republican.
Ha!
Give me another state.
Oklahoma, which is another central state.
Oklahoma. All right, here we go. Okay, Oklahoma is an anomaly here. It's entirely Republican. Entirely.
How about Kansas?
Kansas.
Like, as in, it certainly doesn't like Kansas anymore, Toto.
Yeah.
These are good because they're hard. All right, let's see. Kansas.
That's another really centrally located
state. All right,
state.
Kansas City, Democratic. Topeka, Democratic. Wichita isn't, but those are two major cities. All right, one last example. Choose a state. Choose a Republican state.
Oh, I can choose us.
Our votes aren't in yet, so.
Okay. What about Florida?
Okay, Florida. Great example. Jacksonville, major city. Tallahassee, major city. Orlando, major city. Tampa, major city. Palm Beach, major city, and Miami. All major cities, all Democratic. The rest of it, in the middle of nowhere, Republican. What does that say? What are the major cities surrounded by? What is in most major cities in the United States?
People that actually work and have jobs?
No,
schools. Higher education.
Yeah.
Education. That says the problem right there. Or the problem is right there.
Yeah.
Is that the people that vote for Donald Trump are not as educated.
Yeah, or didn't go. Or
yeah, didn't go. Yeah.
Well, we're getting away from the idea of greatness, but this harks back to a conversation that we had earlier about discernment. And the discernment or the ability to separate fact from fiction.
Yeah.
Or the approximation of fact from fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I won't be absolute in this. But most of the time, we get our information from paragraph or two. If we get more than a paragraph or two, a lot of people's brains today
shut down.
Yeah, they saturate and shut down, right?
Too much overload.
Right. And I know as a teacher, when I give students today an essay to read that's 3 or 4 pages long, and it's well organized with a thesis consistently explored throughout, that oftentimes they get confused by reading it.
Really?
Yeah. Now this differentiates greatly from past centuries. I have a number of books on my shelf. They're grammar books from like the early 1900s. And you'd be amazed at what children in high school and grade school used as grammar text as opposed to what they use today. Incredibly high level. And even going back farther, I had a conversation earlier with somebody about Thomas Paine's great pamphlet, Common Sense,
mm-hmm.
which was written during the Revolutionary War. I want to say the date is about 1777 or 1778 when he wrote it. And Thomas Paine wrote it, maybe 1775 before actually action. No, he wrote it after, I think, action broke out, after Concord and Lexington. But the basic premise was, and the title exemplifies this, is he wanted his audience or everybody to be able to read it. If you could read, you could comprehend this pamphlet. Now, it's a relatively long pamphlet. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but it goes on for a number of pages, right? But everybody who could read could understand it. And yet, I remember running into a college student, a college level student who I had, and this student told me they were taking another class in history And they were reading Common Sense. So I asked, well, how's it going? How do you like Common Sense? It's great work, isn't it? And they told me they couldn't understand it, which I find absolutely astounding. It says something for...
Very ironic.
I don't understand
Common Sense. Right. I don't know what that means. Right. Like, you don't know what Common Sense is? Like,
and yet it was one of the most popular pamphlets of the American Revolution. Yeah. And some of the leaders actually hold that responsible for holding the colonies together during a particular time of great troubles after the fall of New York.
Yeah. Have you guys ever seen the movie Idiocracy?
I haven't, no. You've mentioned it, though. I have.
You guys should both watch it.
Enlighten us.
It's basically what you just said, but in a movie. People were once smart and used to read books and like would go out and do things, go hiking, explore. And technology pretty much took over to the point where like there was people delivering your food. You can get everything from your house. You don't have to leave your house.
I remember having a milkman when I was young.
Yeah, and then like the person that's in charge is a complete idiot and he's like a superpower, like a powerhouse. And
we've had some presidents that were not, they were not like near the front line when God was handing out brains.
A lot of people, the reason why I said that though, is the reason why it's called Idiocracy, because like a lot of people like had stupefied to the point where they couldn't even enunciate sentences. They couldn't talk. They were just like slur. And they weren't drunk. They just.
Well, you know, I don't text. I've borne witness to texts and messages that people leave on different sites.
Yeah.
I can believe that. Yeah.
But I mean, I feel like our country is dumbed down tenfold. You know?
Yeah.
And the numbers show it. I'm not saying everyone that voted for him is dumb. Maybe they're just old school or just hardcore Republicans or whatever.
But that could be an international affair as well, as the internet takes control of
everything.
More of the world. Yeah. That people no longer pick up books, but they
pick up their computer or their iPad or their phone.
Yeah. Do you have any more poems for us, John?
Actually, I haven't looked for one yet. But,
okay.
But let's go back briefly to the idea of greatness. So
okay.
What does Trump?
Oh yeah.
What does he think greatness is? Because he's never really explained it. He just used the term "Let's make America great," but he's never explained what he means by great. We've only assumed that he means make it great economically, which means that put more money, according to if we can gauge that by his recent tax cuts, it means make the rich richer.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're the ones that got all the cuts.
Yeah, I think there was a tax cut initially when he took office, which essentially trying to trickle down economics mentality, and the 10%, what was it? I can't remember what it was, but I'll have to find the numbers. I can't even remember the fact I'm saying. It was a really, really insane fact about the stock market to do with Donald Trump.
How they gone up?
How what?
How the stock market's gone up.
Yeah.
That's another thing that he talks about too. He's like, "Have you seen the stock market?" Like he uses it as like ties himself.
Yeah, of course.
Like
49% of people, 49% of Americans, don't have money in the stock market.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, who are you selling it to? You know, that's only half, I guess.
People that are voting for Joe Biden.
Yeah, and historically. Historically, the American economy has done better under Democratic presidents over a certain amount of years. I wish I could pull this up. I think here it is. Okay. So this is taken from a really well-written comment on Reddit. If you look on the best of Reddit, you can probably find this. According to economists, this gentleman that wrote this comment, is I'm quoting him. According to economists, when I last researched the issue last week, the economy's growth and reduction in unemployment didn't start from Trump. Sorry, am I reading the right article?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. I am. Sorry. Okay.
What the heck?
Okay, so it says it was stock market was all the economy was already in steady growth and continuously reducing unemployment. Excuse me. When Trump took office, which he quickly took credit even before he implemented any policies, after his tax cuts and loans to the rich, which gave the stock market a sugar high, which quickly crashed back down. But at the expense of a drop in RGDP and employment and doubling up the national debt. And his trade war with China, growth slowed down and eventually turned into a contraction just before COVID-19. This contraction is now blamed on COVID, when in actuality, it already happened prior from his trade wars, which was about a year prior to that. I think it was in December of 2018, if I'm not mistaken.
So then if we take his definition of greatness as sanctifying or sanctioning greed,
yeah,
then he's actually failed.
Yeah.
The deficit's much greater.
Much greater.
And people have lost money. He hasn't made America great according to his own definition, yeah. Or at least what we assume his definition is.
Well, he seems like a narcissistic person.
That goes without question. Yeah.
He doesn't care about people. So you got a person that's like president that only cares about himself. It doesn't matter what you say. He's one of those people that you can say anything to him, and he'll still think that he's right. If he didn't think of it, it's not right. It's not great, you know. I think that's his mentality.
So do you think also is great what he thinks making America great also has to do with foreign policy about being some sort of bully?
I think
with China and Korea.
Yeah.
Or dropped out of the Paris Accord.
Yeah. Totally.
Somebody said, I can't remember who it was, and I don't know if this is true to personality theory, but due to the way he was raised. He thinks that being liked getting attention is being liked.
Yeah.
So he's kind of like a megalomaniac, I guess would be a great word. It says here to finish that, this is some of the article or some of that comment I'm reading, but this last part I think will be really interesting. It says, so to put it in layman's terms, average American faces higher unemployment and lower quality of living as our GDP grows, shows. And the 10%, which 10% of the wealthy, the wealthiest people,
yeah,
broke new records in wealth due to the rising stock market. This means wealth disparity grew under Trump. The rising stock market at the expense of our GDP and unemployment and COVID just makes things worse. And guess what? COVID wiped out the stock market growth and more. COVID essentially reset the economy to pre-Trump and post-Obama, only with worse unemployment and double the debt, and without the forward momentum from Obama's administration. And that's so true.
Yeah, that's like right on the money.
So that brings up another possible perception.
What?
And that is, the person who's been hurt the most is rural America.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the statistics we just looked at for a certain number of states, it's actually rural America that's voting for Trump.
Yeah.
But they're the big losers in Trump's.
Pretty much.
That's the conundrum.
Right. I find that incomprehensible.
He's exploiting their lack of understanding.
So that goes back to the idea of his definition of what makes America great and how they perceive that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make America great.
Mentality is probably something like this.
Does it? Well,
don't believe anything I say.
Well, does it have less to do with economics and more to do with this ideal bully mentality of patriotism?
Yeah, control.
I think that's what it is. Like, well, I think he's just the face of this too. You know, he's the face. He's the puppet of the GOP. Yeah. You know, they are crooks, and they're using him because he's a powerful tool for them.
But isn't a lot of the GOP sort of backing away from him?
I don't think so, honestly.
Well, as long as they can use him.
Yeah, for sure. He's just a tool for them because he gets the people, the masses, to believe him. Another thing that's astounding is that a lot of the people from the country, like let's say Oklahoma, you know, you said Oklahoma, Zach, and we looked at it, it's entirely Republican.
Yeah.
Oklahoma, if they saw a New Yorker business boy, you know, down in some random podunk nowhere city in Oklahoma walking down the street in a business suit, they'd probably punch him in the mouth for being a city boy.
Yeah.
So why the hell are they voting for Trump? Because that's exactly what he is.
Well, maybe that's what they want to be. They want to be someone that is wearing a suit and has lots of money.
Yeah.
Do you think Trump ever had...
And has like a 10-word vocabulary.
Do you think Trump ever had dirt under his nails?
Maybe, but... I don't think from working, maybe from something else. Who knows what?
Right. Powder under his nails.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Something of the sort.
But that idea of a false patriotism.
Yeah.
Of a making America great.
False prophet.
You know, if you go back to World War II was actually very enlightening for a lot of rural Americans. They had never really left their towns at all. During World War II.
During
World War II. What World War II did for a lot of very rural and isolationist Americans, when we were drawn into the war, and certainly Pearl Harbor, made a lot of patriots out of isolationists. But a lot of these young boys, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, they had never left, I'm going to use a sort of a cliche term, but they had never left the farm.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they're traveling around the world and their eyes are opening wide as to other cultures, other beliefs, other languages, of course. And they came back, I think, from my readings, I think a much smarter population. They had seen some of the world that they never knew existed.
Yeah.
At such a young age, too.
And a very impressionable age.
Took it all in.
Right. Right. But we don't
have... Dude, it sounds really bad afterwards.
But we don't have that now. You know, a lot of the children in rural America, they don't get that ability to travel much. And certainly with the economics the way they are, they can't.
Yeah. They're
and
not
certainly with COVID, they're not.
Unfortunately, yeah. Can you imagine the generation of teenagers? Let's say this lasts for another 3 years, which is really stretching it. But I mean, we've already pretty much finished the first year.
Yeah.
Let's say it lasts another 2 years.
Well, we've gone
years,
like
so.
6-7 months, not a year, but yeah.
Yeah. February, I think it'll be a year.
Will it be that? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. When we first heard about it in China.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I thought.
No, we heard about it in January.
December.
Okay,
that's the argument that they're making is that they should have shut down in January. We heard about it in China.
I was reading articles about it in December, the end of December.
Yeah.
And like that was December, right after Christmas, like 25th or something like that. And then January, you started seeing more and more articles about it.
Yeah.
And then I don't think it was announced until what, February?
I think they shut down because they had to in February. They pretty much...
But
yeah.
They knew all about it.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't approach in a year then.
Apparently they said that they knew about it in November and didn't say anything.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So what was the question?
Well, that whole idea of what level of experience, because that's what the boys in World War II, experienced was they experienced world culture.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Right. Whereas that's being denied to a lot of rural Americans today, economics, maybe just the unwillingness to explore and
isolation
and a certain amount, certainly a lot of xenophobia.
Yeah.
with the idea of keeping the immigrants out. You know, Trump won a lot of votes for declaring he's going to build a wall.
Yeah.
And then separating parents from children once they cross that wall. Which I have heard that he may be brought up on charges in the World Criminal Court.
Really?
Yeah.
I hope that's the case, but
My younger sister told me that the other night. What's that? There's a group in Europe that explores crimes against humanity.
Uh huh.
And this possibly may come up as that.
I really hope so. I mean, American presidents. I mean, with the exception of Nixon, but even Nixon got off. As far as I know, they never have consequences for all their war crimes. And I'm pretty sure they're in the modern, let's say the last 50, 60 years, I think every U.S. president has probably committed a war crime.
No. And then afterwards, they're like, well, it's hard.
Yeah,
that sucks.
No, they don't even have to answer for it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, they just end up leaving office. And,
yeah,
like, they got a lot of money and they have a house and they just live their life.
Yeah, and they get a Secret Service for the rest of their life.
Yeah,
I mean, I hope that's not the case with the Don, but I guess we'll find out. Any luck on the poetry, Sean?
I can recite a poem.
if you're ready. If not, we could go to a piece.
No, this one is I think this might be timely, and that's sort of a pun because it's called On Time. and the reason I say that is all things eventually pass.
All things must pass.
Right. I think it predates George Harrison, but he used it in that terminology, yes. Right.
Beatles Mania.
And this one happens to be by John Milton, who was born in 1608 and died in 1674. John Milton is one of the greatest of English poets, gave us Paradise Lost, which you haven't read it. It's a rousing good tale. I highly recommend it. A little dense, but I highly recommend it. On Time by John Milton. Fly, envious time, till thou run out thy race. Call on the lazy, leaden-stepping hours, whose speed is but the heavy plummet's pace, and glut thyself with what thy womb devours, which is no more than what is false and vain, and merely mortal dross. So little is our loss, so little is thy gain. For when is each thing bad, though thou hast entombed, and last of all, thy greedy self consumed, then long eternity shall greet our bliss with an individual kiss. And joy shall overtake us as a flood when everything that is sincerely good and perfectly divine with truth and peace and love shall ever shine about the supreme throne of him to whose happy making sight alone. When once our heavenly guided soul shall climb, then all this earthly grossness quit. Attired with stars, we shall forever sit, triumphing over death and chance and thee, O time.
Okie dokie.
That was Chopin with the... I don't know how to say this word. I always butcher. Is it scherzo or
scherzo?
Scherzo. Okay.
Scherzo.
That's what I normally pronounce it like. Scherzo number 2 in B flat minor, Opus 31. And I don't know who's performing it. I've been getting a lot of our music lately from Creative Commons type websites because of licensing. So it doesn't say the artist or the pianist. Anyway, Sean, you had something to comment on about greatness, right?
Well, I would just like to summarize what, and this is strictly a personal opinion, but what I think, what makes America great,
mm-hmm.
right? Speaking contemporarily for our contemporary United States, I think what makes us great is we still can go out and vote.
It's still a lot of vote.
We can still go out and vote. We can still get up on the street corner and spot our views.
Yeah.
In many ways, this is really a wonderful country. It has, but I will concede that it has many faults. But in basic freedoms, we have them.
Yeah, I agree.
And we're very fortunate for them. We should be very fortunate for them. In other countries, you don't have that freedom to get up on the street corner and spout your views. In many other countries, right, you go directly to jail without passing go,
yeah.
Right? Not collecting your $200.
There, so I was sitting around watching the election this morning, and it was after Wisconsin had flipped, and they were still counting. I'm sorry, Michigan and Wisconsin flipped.
Yeah.
So. What was it? They were counting Pennsylvania still, as they still are currently during the time of this podcast.
There's a lot of votes in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, millions. I think there was last night there was like a million left to count or something, and Donald Trump was saying they pretty much counted them all. I don't know why they're not just giving it to us, which was misinformation.
Yeah.
Which gets to my point. Again, he was saying this morning they were making all these claims that they're not allowing them to watch the poll. What are they called? The people that count the votes.
I don't know.
The poll watchers. They're not allowing them to be there to observe the process, which is absolutely false. And it was, fact checked by at least NBC and I know PolitiFact as well. So, somebody on NBC, I think, I can't remember which one of their analysts, I think his name is Todd something. He said something which really made a lot of, it made great sense to me. He was like, when you go out and make a statement like this, it doesn't change anybody's mind, or it doesn't really change the outcome of the election. All it does is weaken people's confidence in democracy, and it weakens their confidence in the voting process, which is extremely harmful. That's what dictators do.
Yeah,
they lay the seeds of doubt and they wait for them to grow.
Yeah.
So I mean, just,
and that's how bad things grow.
Yeah,
that's how riots start.
Yeah, exactly. It shows his negligence just by making comments like that.
So these individual freedoms that we have, such as voting, and if many people think that's what makes America great, then Trump is undermining that greatness.
Mm-hmm.
And if we go back in history and think about America's greatness in the past, well, this nation doesn't have a clean slate as far as goodness. We don't have a continuous line of gold stars on our forehead.
No, but we're diversified.
We are diversified.
From all parts of the world.
And we've had some really golden star moments.
Yeah.
For instance, the Civil War.
Yeah.
The Union Army was a unique army in the history of the world in that it set out to free another people. Now, you may undermine that in many ways. You may say, well, no, they were just out to preserve the Union. But, after 1862, when Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation after the Battle of Antietam. The Union Army was fighting for the freedom of slaves. Uh-huh. And so you're talking about an army that for the first time, one of the first times in history, that is fighting on the behalf of another people for their welfare, not for gold, not for territory, not for power.
Just for another human being.
Just for another human being. And we can skip forward to World War One. One of the black marks, of course, is the Spanish-American War, where we fought our imperial war to gain territory. But if you skip ahead to World War One, we went out to help. I mean, yeah, you could sort of waffle this, but I think for the most part, most Americans went overseas to preserve democracy and prevent Germany and their alliance from taking over Europe. And then, of course, World War II, where, again, we were preserving our country because if we didn't go out and help other people, we would have been overrun, I think, ourselves.
Yeah.
But
no one would have came to help us.
Well, it would have been too late because they would have all been taken over by that time.
Yeah.
We would have been the last one. We would have been the last domino.
So don't you think it's like an involuntary action?
Yes and no.
If we don't help now, then there isn't going to be anyone to help us.
Right, but I also think that
they did it out of the greater good.
Yes, I really think so. Yeah, I take that positive view that we did it out of the greater good. That America stepped forward and not only produced the manpower, but produced the supplies.
Yeah.
And if people don't want to read a book, I will
recommend.
Yeah, I would recommend not a book, but a movie. Yeah. It's actually a documentary which was, I think, done in the 50s. It's called Victory at Sea. And it's basically about how America supplied the world with arms and food and everything they needed to first win the war and then get the world back on its feet. Like the Marshall Plan was wholly, well, I mean, not wholly, but because every nation, like every individual, has self-interest.
Yeah.
But the idea was to get the world back on its feet. And that's what the Marshall Plan did.
Right.
And I think a really good example of Americans' altruism in World War II is the Monument Men. And a very famous movie, if you ever read anything about them in various books.
This is the Nazi stealing the paintings, right? Is that the
Nazi
one?
Stealing everything they could from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Particularly artworks of all sorts. But many, many other things on top of that.
Right.
And the goal of the Monument Men was to find those goods and return them to their rightful owners.
Mm-hmm.
Where the Russians, on the other hand, were coming in and just taking it as contraband. And I think that, in a nutshell, I think that portrays American World War II setting out to help the world to become what it once was and lift it back on its feet and help it as much as we could.
Mm-hmm.
And those to me are moments of American greatness. Vietnam War was not a moment of greatness. We helped, in my opinion, we helped an inferior and very corrupt government hold power when Vietnam should have been a whole nation. But we were partly forced into it by the French. And as to why we supported a colonial nation as late as the 1960s is beyond my comprehension, but we bowed to the French and helped them or continued their fight in Vietnam. And those to me are that altruism, I think, is what makes America great.
I agree. Also, you can look at the war crimes of the presidents, or not just presidents, but the government. And you can say, yeah, based off of that and all the damage that has caused over the years, yeah, America doesn't seem like that great of a place. But you look at everything else that has come from this country, and I think it puts up an equal if not greater weight. Like, we've provided hope and stability for so many generations of immigrants.
I think there's a reason why so many people from all over the world want to come here.
Yeah, exactly.
For instance, your family from Turkey.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I've lived, you know, in Turkey and parts of Europe, and Europe is great, but I would never want to live there because it's you don't, even in Europe, you don't feel like you do here. It's not like there's something about it here that truly, like you were saying, Sean, those liberties and those freedoms. Yeah, just walking down the street. You feel like somebody, no matter what happens here, somebody will have your back. Even like if the law is broken and you're harmed, it's going to be okay because you live in America. If that happens in some other country, you're kind of shit out of luck in a lot of situations.
You wake up in an alleyway, beat to shit, no money. Yeah. You're like, fuck, no one's going to help me. No one helped me before.
Exactly.
I think I know. I'm born and raised here, but from what I've heard.
Well, you know, from my travels, and I've traveled relatively extensively, it's amazing in this country that you can just walk down the street and whistle a tune, you know, and nobody's going to bother you. And that freedom. For the most part, right? You know, somebody may like, you're whistling out of tune. Yeah. Right? Or I don't like that song.
I run into a lot of crazies. Every month there's at least one or
two. Well, that's individual crazy, but we're talking about somebody in a uniform pulling you aside.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The idea of just being able to carelessly whistle and walk down the street, we have that in this country, and I think it's a glorious freedom that we often overlook.
Yeah. So,
but
we're getting a caller.
But, Murat, you have a number, unless you have some election news?
Let's take this caller.
Okay. Oh, we have a caller. Whoa.
All right. Hello.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Well, I'm in a bit of a chaotic moment. I have family members from both sides of my family calling me, asking me if I voted because they want me to vote for people that they deem votable for. I mean, Biden and Trump and all this stuff. And I'm kind of in the crosshairs in a really uncomfortable situation. Can I talk to you guys about that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
We're kind of having trouble finding things to talk about today because our other main co-host is not here. So this is perfect.
Oh, I used to have a Block Talk radio show. We had 30,000 listeners a day. So I'm more than happy to be entertaining for you guys.
Oh, you said you have 30,000 listeners?
No, when I used to do a Block Talk radio show, yeah. I had 30,000 listeners a day. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Not my proudest moment, by the way.
All right, well, can we get your name since you're joining us?
My name is Josh.
Good to meet you, Josh.
Nice to meet you, man. I'm Zach.
So what was your question?
Well, no, it was kind of the entire inquiry of the kind of shit show that we're dealing with now, because we have a very divided America where have members of both sides of my family asking me if I voted, and they were like, oh, did you vote for Biden? Did you vote for Trump? And I'm like, dude, there is no way that there is a good outcome to either of them winning. There's going to be some domestic disturbance.
Absolutely. I agree.
You could vote green, man.
Yeah.
You go neutral. My aunt from
the suburbs of Chicago, she's very hardcore Trump, and she was like, did you vote? And I was like, yeah, Joe Jorgensen 2020.
He's the independent party, right?
Yeah, she did not enjoy that.
So you're saying that you're worried about the divisiveness of the country, regardless of who is elected, correct?
Well, Well, I'm talking about the psychological impact when it comes to this stuff. I think that people have completely dropped their daily routines. I mean, like, the people, like, they're emotionally retarded. So the people that, like, have bills to pay, they have families to take care of, mortgages to pay, these people have completely shifted their entire focus other than, you know, dealing with the stuff that actually directly impacts their life on a local level, on a personal level, to the federal game. What do you guys think about that? Because I know that there is about to be crazy nonsense in the streets. I mean, that's about to happen. Regardless of what anybody believes, there is going to be some crazy stuff happening.
I think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So you said they've dropped their daily tasks to...
Are you talking about people that are in quarantine still?
Not even necessarily. I'm saying that... No, me too. I've never stopped working. I'm saying that these people have invested emotionally... They've made this political stuff all encompassing.
Yeah. Well, to me, like how to go about dealing with it. I would say I am emotionally also. I think everybody in this country, if not a lot of people in the world as well outside of the country, are emotionally involved. I would say, you know, like the way I go about it is. Realize that just like anything, so let's say I talk to a lot of people that I work in a suicide hotline, and a lot of the people that call in, they harm themselves, like they cut themselves, or you know, that type of self-harm. And a lot of the times why they do that is because they want to feel in control of something. And I think the same goes for being so aggressively partisan or aggressively political.
One-sided.
Yeah, is because you want to feel in control of that aspect of your life, I think, personally. I mean, this is all psychoanalytical and possibly conjecture, but I think the more partisan and the more radical somebody is, the more they want to be in control of that situation because they're either afraid of outcome or whatever it is. And I think the answer is to kind of just realize that the only thing that is in control that in your control is your reaction.
Yeah, and your actions towards it.
Yeah.
Well, I have a very Ron Swanson answer for that. It's if you pick up a hobby where you actually work with your hands, a lot of that tension goes away.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Sean, I'm sure you've heard him talking earlier. He's a guitarist.
Yeah.
So,
well, I'm telling you, there were okay, so you guys are actually awesome musicians.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Okay, that's good.
Awesome. I thought you said also. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm also.
No. I was saying awesome. Okay, so you guys aren't Van Halen or anything, but you're maybe.
No.
No. RIP Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah, that guy was a genius. Anyway, I was saying that we had stuff working where What was that?
Oh, it was just a banana peel.
All right. No, we had stuff back. It's just crazy to me because we were forming all this stuff prior to Trump. We were forming all this stuff where, like, we would have organizations of men who would go out and hunt and do basically grown-up Boy Scout stuff together. And I don't know what happened to that after Trump, and I don't know how to rationalize today. Can you guys tell me how to think?
I can't really tell you how to think, but
I just say don't let it be any sweat off your back, man. Like the political game itself, like all you can really do is sit back and watch, you know. And you're right to a certain extent. What's going to happen is going to happen. I don't think that it's going to be a peaceful transfer, regardless of whoever wins. but you can always be the better person and like not be one of the people that make it chaotic. But I don't know, man. I can't tell anyone how to think. I'm just telling you what I would do.
I know. That's what I worry about, though. I worry that, a lot of people are just over here like, I have the ability to work. I have the ability to pay my bills, take care of my family, work my job. And then all this other stuff outside is happening. And I don't know if there's like a realistic way coming from Obama to Trump era, Trump to Biden era, that there's going to be a peaceful transition in that. I think that there's going to be a lot of really angry people, never worked a day in their life. They're going to be out there on the streets being, well, less than peaceful. Let's call it that.
Violent, yeah. I think you're absolutely right. And I think I don't think we need to tell you how to think, man. It sounds like you know exactly.
You're thinking the same thing we're thinking. Is essentially what
we don't know any better.
I'm not going to lie. I did load all my magazines with bullets. I'm not going to lie.
You did what?
I did that because I loaded all my magazines with bullets because I'm like, I'm not going to go out on the streets with all this craziness. But if someone comes in through my front door, there's no win. I mean,
well, yeah. That's a good way to think. Yeah, exactly. Because you never know.
Yeah,
at least you're prepared.
I
don't think it'll come down to anybody coming into your front door, though.
Yeah, I hope not.
No. Where I'm at, we're in a small. I'm in a small college town in Illinois, and during those that coordinated riot season, I was working security. And they destroyed like 57 businesses in a small town.
Wow.
So I know that they're here. I know that the people that do stuff like that are here. And I'm worried.
Yeah, you're kind of in the heart.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but that's what it is, though. I'm out here in the suburbs. I don't want them to touch my house. It's not, I don't know. I'm in a very complicated situation because.
Well, do you have another question for us? Otherwise, I think we're going to move on to our final segment.
Can it be a complicated question that is going to make you ponder your entire life?
Only complicated questions here, please.
On our thoughts tonight.
What is the point?
What is the point of life?
What is the point of this election?
No. I know. No, there's the point. No, the point of everything. What's the point?
I think,
man,
the
I'm
point. I don't think
the
there
show.
Is. A,
you seem to be. I know. I appreciate.
Man.
I don't think that there is a point. I think that that's the problem.
That's the point.
That's the problem with
is
life
the point.
Is that people try to make put some meaning to it. And that's why they can't find it, is because there is no meaning to it. But I'm an existentialist.
I think there is meaning to it. It's like when you read a book, you're reading in between the lines. All the things in between the lines is like what's worth it. Your experiences with friends and making music and just certain conversations, that's the point. Being able to like have freedom and do things that you want to do of your interest.
There's no such thing as free will. Those can all be explained by neurological responses.
All right, well. Whatever you do in your day-to-day life, enjoy.
So the point of the pointlessness of everything is that experience is a thing.
But that doesn't mean it's the point.
No, I think attitude's a thing.
Attitude? How so?
Experience is something that we gain and we may gain knowledge from it or not. We may gain wisdom from it or not.
Or just experience.
But attitude, how we look at everything. I'm going to quote a poem for you.
All right.
Okay?
All right.
This poem is by W.H. Auden, one of the great 20th century. He's so great a poet that both the English and the Americans claim them as their own. He was born in 1907 and died in 1973. This poem is called September 1st, 1939. Which was the first day of World War II in Europe. It's when Germany invaded Poland. So Auden is in England when he's writing this poem. And I think it's an attitude that we would all do well to apply to our lives. It's the last stanza. Defenseless under the night, our world in stupor lies. Yet, dotted everywhere, ironic points of light flash out where the just exchange their messages. May I, composed like them of Eros and of dust, beleaguered by the same negation and despair, show an affirming flame.
All right. So, that was amazing, Sean. I hope that answers a question for... remind me your name one more time.
Josh.
I'm Josh. No, I appreciate that. Not as on the spot as the Star Spangled Banner, I will admit. No, that.
Hey, Josh, yeah, I'm gonna have to let you go because we're gonna end the show here soon. But you should follow us or follow us on www.ourthoughtstonight.com. But thank you for calling in. We really appreciate it.
Calling again.
And good luck.
Yeah, man. Stay safe, buddy.
Here, keep me on. I'll just mute out.
Okay. All right. So we are going to go to a Mozart piece to lighten the mood. Thank you, Sean, for the... Our Thoughts Tonight. We are back.
Our Thoughts Tonight.
And we're on the front page, I guess, of our Blog Talk Radio, which is
on Our Thoughts Tonight.
Yeah, which is great.
What a claim to fame.
That's our first time.
First time.
So, what were you saying, Zach, about the wall?
Oh, yeah. Trump always wanted a wall, but he didn't know that it was going to be a Democratic wall on the left-hand side of the United States.
Got him.
Banana peel.
That's what I'm looking for. There it is.
Get him.
All right. So I have some questions I wanted to ask Sean and Zach.
Shoot.
Okay. Let's say, who wants to start, I should say?
Sean. I've been volunteering.
Okay, Sean is volunteering. Okay, here's a good one.
Okay.
What is your favorite season and why? I think this is a great question for you.
My favorite season and why? So shall I go into the whole tradition of the archetype of seasons?
Yeah, however you want. Yeah, it's all you.
The idea of the dying and reviving god goes back well into the Paleolithic era. Well, I will say that most poetry has been written about spring, rebirth, love, greening, flowers, summer, greater maturity, but fall slipping toward death. And of course, winter as death, where the sun disappears and will not come back for a while. And a lot of mythologies are built around this whole tradition of the sun moving, well, here in the Northern Hemisphere, moving south and not coming back for some time. And we're still slipping into darkness up here in the North Woods. Yeah, it's getting colder. But as far as my favorite season, this may sound ironic or contradictory, but I would say that winter is my favorite season because winter begins on December 21st, and that's the date the sun turns around and starts its journey north, right? So with December 21st comes hope.
Yeah.
The sun is returning. It's only a matter of time. But as you slip after June 21st, the sun slowly disappears. So the beginning of summer at June 21st is actually, for me, melancholy. I won't say sad, I won't say tragic, but it's melancholy.
Yeah.
Because it marks the sun going away. So for me,
a trip around the sun.
Right. So for me, winter, even though it's the darkest season of the year, and it typifies death in most mythologies,
uh-huh,
I think it's my favorite season because it marks the point the sun is coming back.
Yeah,
I agree.
I hate winter. I can't feel my hands and my feet.
Winter is my favorite season as well.
I get super creative during winter when I'm indoors, but when I'm outside, man, I'm like 20 minutes, can't feel my hands,
yeah,
can't feel my feet. I'm good. I'll look at it, though, through a window.
I really enjoy the outside in winter when it's snowing.
Yeah.
But when it's just, like, cold, like, dry cold.
That's what I'm talking about,
then
dry cold.
Just in small amounts. Like, it's really nice after you've been, like, in a hot kitchen or something.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so do you want the same question? Let's give you a different question.
Yeah.
All right. So this is a good one, because you're a funny guy, right, Zach?
I think. I don't know.
Yeah. So I think this is a great question for you because I think of you as a funny person.
Okay.
Who is the funniest person you know and why?
Know of? Like?
No, you know personally.
Oh, that I know.
Like, who just makes you, like, crack up like nobody's business?
I'd have to. Probably Zach Potter, dude. Probably the other Zach.
Yeah, you're right.
Because whenever I hang out with that kid, man, it's just like, it's in unison. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We'd all hang out together, and I'd crack a joke, and then he'd crack a joke, and then it'd be back and forth like ping pong.
Okay.
And it wouldn't stop.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Okay, one more for Sean. All right. So
that was really fast.
It's an easy question, I guess.
Yeah, it was really easy. If you were going to say, though...
famous people?
Famous people.
Okay, famous
Dave
people.
Dave Chappelle, George Carlin, Robin Williams, Chris Rock. Those are my four top favorite four comedians of all time.
Okay, here's a good one for Sean. Good choices, by the way, Zach. Was there ever an event in your life that defied explanation?
Oh, shit. It's got real.
Almost surreal. Almost metaphysical. Supernatural. Defied. Say that again. Defied explanation?
Yes. Was there ever an event in your life that defied explanation?
Oh, like the question of how to interpret that defied explanation. Well, there was one car accident. I was the only car involved in the White Mountains of New Hampshire, coming down a little bit too fast. I was a little too young and a little too anxious to get home in the middle of winter, coming out of the White Mountains, and
winter.
Doing too many 360s in the road before slamming into a snowbank.
Oh, nice. I've been there.
All right.
With an Audi. Just kidding.
Right, but I think because I think it mostly revolves around accidents and how we somehow manage to survive those accidents.
Yeah.
So even more than that accident in the White Mountains many years ago, it's about 8 years ago, I was climbing South Twin Peak or East Twin Peak. And we were coming down from the summit and we had to come down this steep rock gully. And my friend Tucker and I were coming down.
Was it anything like flat top? Like when you're driving up flat top, how it's steep and very narrow?
Even more steep.
Oh, geez.
And it was actually a very narrow gully. It was about, well, at that point it would widen about 25 or 30 feet. But I looked back up toward the summit or back up toward the summit ridge and I saw this rock come bounding around a corner. Apparently we had loosened it, but it didn't come loose when we passed over it.
Like a landslide or?
No, one single boulder, the size of a pillow, and it came bounding down the gully and it was heading toward Tucker first, who was on the opposite. Cause the point is when you're coming down a gully, you want to climb either up or down next to each other and not on top of each other. Otherwise you'll dump rocks in each other.
Yeah.
So I called the Tucker, look out. And just before it bounded the Tucker, it hit a rock and ricocheted almost 45 degrees right toward me. And I was lucky to get an arm up and it slammed into my arm. And according to Tucker, I went ragdolling down the gully about 25 or 30 feet.
Whoa.
And I remember, I blacked out for about 20 or 30 seconds and then woke up and I managed to haul myself under a boulder with Tucker as we discussed what to do at that point. We're about 5 miles from the car, still about 1,000 or 1,500 feet up this steep gully. Mm-hmm. And it was about 2 miles to the nearest trail. So the idea was how to get down, because the rock first hit my arm and then hit my leg. So my leg was largely, fortunately, it didn't break a bone in my leg. Otherwise, I wouldn't be sitting here right now.
Yeah.
Because it was October 25th. And October 25th in Alaska, the darkness falls really quick, and then it gets really cold.
Oh, yeah.
And then your bones start to hurt.
Well, I was close to shock. So I think if I had not, I think if the decision I made at that point were definitely life-determining. And I knew if I stayed there and waited for help to come, I would have died. Because darkness was falling really fast. And it was already 30 degrees. And it was going to go down a lot more than that before the hours passed, before help would come to me. And plus, on top of that, I was in shock or near shock.
Yeah.
So I took the choice to hobble down the mountain. And it took a long time to get down. But I eventually...
That was your best bet, though.
That was my only bet.
Yeah.
I was staking.
No, let's keep going.
I was staking the house on that.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah, so that is that one place, that is that one thing that is unexplainable, that I should be dead. That rock was as big as a pillow.
Yeah.
If I didn't get my hand up, it would have slammed into my chest.
See, this is why I don't mind.
What was that?
Shit like this.
Zach said, "This is why I don't climb." But yeah, that to me is unexplainable. Why I am sitting here, talking to you two gentlemen, and to this radio audience—I should say, blog audience out there.
At least Josh is listening.
Right.
Hey, you know what? I'm glad you climbed down the mountain.
Yeah.
Thanks. Me too.
So you made it home that night, right?
I made it to the hospital that night.
Oh, really?
And they operated on my arm that night, and Tucker and Ginger took me into their house to recover for the next couple of weeks.
Wow. Right. When was this?
About 8 years ago.
Oh, so that was when you broke your arm, right?
That was when I broke my arm.
Okay, I remember that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Right. I actually wrote I actually wrote a long story about that. But Tucker checked the details. I had him proofread it because he was there. And he said, yeah, it's accurate.
I messed my arm up too one time, but it wasn't from a boulder.
Right.
It's from me stabbing it on accident. Because I was cutting something on an old-ass ladder.
You were cutting somebody else up?
No, I said I was cutting something.
Oh, okay.
I was cutting a zip tie on a piece of truss because I was doing, like, lighting and sound, and then I was on this, like, ladder from the 1800s or something, man. Straight wood, no metal at all. And it shifts as I cut, and it goes, like, into my arm, and I was like, I had to stab myself. And I pulled it out, and everyone's like, don't pull it out. Just, like, squirting blood, and I was in shock.
Yeah, you were still trying to work, weren't you?
No, I worked for 3 hours after I stabbed myself, and then I went to the hospital. I put a big thing of napkins on it, and then wrapped it in gas tape.
Weren't you, like drinking Red Bull so your blood was, like, pumping hard?
Yeah, that's why I was shooting out of my arm, because I had a 20-ounce Red Bull, and when I went to the doctor, he said, he opened up my arm with, like, backwards, like, eyelash curlers. If that makes any sense, and like opened it up so I can see inside of my arm, and I was like fascinated. I was in shock. I didn't feel any pain, but I was like, whoa, this is crazy. It's so cool. But, and then it just starts squirting at him. This guy's just like wearing goggles and a mask, and it's hitting his goggles and mask. And he's like, yep, this is Red Bull induced. I'm like, how do you know? He's like, too many kids stab themselves these days. I was like, is there really that many kids doing that? Like, this is an accident, buddy. But that's crazy. That was my. Yeah, and then I had to go into, like, physical therapy.
But fortunately, you were near a car.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
All right, so you ready? One more question?
Yeah, sorry.
All right.
I went off.
No, that was great. That's a great story. Both of your stories.
Yeah.
All right, so this is for Zach, but anyone's welcome to answer. You can call in and answer if you'd like. If you could if you could learn the answer to one question about your future, what would the question be?
If I could learn the answer to my future, what would the answer be? Or if I knew the answer?
So, if you could learn the answer to one question about your future, what would the question be?
When do I die?
Oh, gosh, really?
Yeah.
Of all things, would you really want to know that, though?
Yeah.
Then you'd be counting. You'd be.
No, I don't think I'd be counting. I think I'd be living it up, man. I'd be like, nah, man, I got a definite date. I know.
I think that there's a reason why we don't know exactly when we're going to die.
I don't want to know how. I just want to know when.
That would be so painful. Sitting there wondering for hours and days and weeks and months and years.
I don't think I'd be wondering, though. I'd be like, I'd be crossing off bucket list, man.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe.
That's one of the questions. I don't know.
What if it was a week from now and you got that answer?
Well, that would fucking suck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but that let's say it was 10 years down the road.
Yeah.
That 10 years is going to turn into a week eventually, and you're going to go crazy waiting.
That's true. I don't know. Maybe not that one. How my son will turn out when I'm gone.
That's a good one, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's a good question.
When I'm not around anymore, I want to know what kind of man my son is.
I think that's a great question. Yeah. What about you, Sean?
I wouldn't want to know anything. I'm serious.
You're like, I already know.
I'm deadly serious. I don't want to be burdened. I want to be surprised.
Yeah, I agree. It would take a lot of the joy out of things to know.
Right. Yeah.
Temporal
but
discounting.
Even if you weren't here anymore?
I still wouldn't want to know. Yeah. It won't make a difference to me anyways once I'm gone. But I just... One of the joys of living, and I think we are so damn lucky to be here, the events that brought us to this place and time, us three in this bar.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just think of, like, the spark in our parents' eyes that brought us into existence.
Yeah.
Right?
New podcast.
The odds of all of us being here.
Right?
That's funny. We just started.
Or even the odds of life
three
being
dudes in a bar.
Or even the odds of life being generated on this planet.
Yeah.
You know, we're
yeah.
next to nil.
Yeah.
I would prefer not to know about the future.
You don't have any questions?
I have no questions.
What about the past?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So what question about your past that you don't know would you like to answer?
Where the hell I came from? Who are my ancestors, man?
That would be cool.
Yeah.
I guess you could find out through the DNA.
No, I can't.
Test, but
there's irregularities in my family to where, like, they don't know who's parent or whatever.
Oh.
Yeah. So I can't. Yeah. I don't know. That'd be something good to know.
Yeah, the past is entirely different.
Yeah.
Right. To know as much as possible of the past. Yes, I'm all for that.
Yeah. I know you are, man. You're like a walking encyclopedia.
No, but I'm fascinated about history. And, oh, my gosh, like to see like a video of how people passed their days in Paleolithic times.
Yeah.
You know, before the written word.
Yeah.
To see a video of the Battle of Waterloo, mm-hmm. like and how it in, like the horrors of that. Or sit around a campfire, you know, in Alexander's army in like 330 BC, and hear what the soldiers and talked about. Oh my gosh, I would love to know that stuff.
Oh yeah,
I mean, so because ultimately,
you can, like, go back in time and just be present, but like they're not aware of your
no,
presence.
not go back in time, but like either have a transcription or a video of them. Well, to go back in time would be one thing.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I would get myself in lots of trouble as any person from the 21st century traveling back in time.
Bullshit, man. I pick up a fucking loot and you're good.
No, because a lot of our thoughts today.
You'd be the Beethoven of back then.
But a lot of our thoughts today would also be heretical.
Yeah, you're right. We'd probably end up. You know, they'd think we're witches.
Yeah.
Right?
Or scientists, which is basically a witch.
Right, but to know about those little things of the past life that we don't know,
yeah.
Right, would be...
Wouldn't that be a bitch, though? If you're a historian,
right?
So what if you went back in time and you're meeting the people that you know so much about, and you're like, yo, man, what if you were the guy that was assuring
going
them...
Going and answering their questions
their
about
future.
The future.
Wouldn't that be a bitch? And you're the guy that doesn't want to know about your own future, but you know their future because you know about the past.
You're presuming that I would answer that question.
Yeah.
No, I'm not presuming nothing. I'm just saying, what if? Like, what if they asked you and didn't leave you alone? You're like, man, don't you see I'm trying
but
to
they have
my
to know
lose?
That they have to know I'm from the future first.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true, yeah.
And I would.
Well,
if I told them I was from the future...
They would pick up though because if
no
you
no
them,
no
if you,
I would
you
I would either be I would either be like on top of the flames
yeah
right or crucified
yeah but certain people may not be like that like because you already like told like you were just saying we expressed our views and like our outlooks on things and like if you went back with the same mentality back then like maybe not fully give it away but
all right let me give you a hypothetical question okay say you went back in time
yeah.
and you told some person like. Working on Cheops pyramid in ancient Egypt.
Yeah.
You said, okay, by the way, I know what's going to happen 3,000 years from now.
Yeah.
Right? What do you think that person would say?
They think you're fucking crazy.
Like,
exactly.
Man, you're crazy. And then
exactly.
What I do, I'd show them my Nikes, and I'm like, see this shit? No, I'm just joking.
They'd throw your ass in a in a loony bin.
Yeah.
All right. So one last question.
All right.
For
that is a cool question, though.
That is a good question.
Oh, that was really good.
So whose turn was it?
It was his. That was
this is your turn, right?
Yes, my turn.
Okay. I want to ask this to both of you guys.
I just interjected.
But you first, Zach. And then I think we have about, we'll try to keep this one about 30 seconds. And then do you have another poem, Sean?
Yeah.
And we have another poem, and then we're going to leave with some more Mozart. So, Zach, what is a controversial opinion that you have?
Controversial opinion that I have?
Yeah.
Can you use that in a sentence? I don't know, man. A controversial opinion that I have. I don't know. Sean, you first. I don't know. I gotta think. I don't think I have a controversial opinion.
Oh, well, I guess that's a good thing. That in itself is kind of controversial to some people, I guess.
I'm gonna shoot myself in the foot. I don't know, man.
You don't have a controversial opinion.
No, I don't.
I could say that you're pretty agreeable, so I could see that.
I mean, except for politics, man.
I mean, that wouldn't be controversial to some people, though.
Yeah, but it might be.
To the opposing,
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's. I don't know.
What about you, Sean?
I have pantheistic tendencies.
Okay, so you believe the universe is God.
No, I believe that, well, if you rephrase that, I believe that there is an entity in everything.
Okay.
Right?
I agree.
So I'm many godded.
Everything's connected and equals one.
Not only connected, but I think everything has a deity inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I can believe that.
Yeah.
It makes more sense than a lot of the other stuff we hear.
I wish I could answer that question better, man. I'm a very simplistic dude.
One controversial opinion I have for all of you listening is that I think people should have to have an IQ test before they have children.
Or be a police officer.
Why?
I don't know, because they like kneel on people's necks and shit.
Oh, to have an IQ test.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That. I think that some precincts do that. And if your IQ is too high, they won't hire you.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
They probably hire you somewhere else, like CIA.
No, they won't hire you for. They're not associated with those agencies.
Yeah,
but
like
if your IQ is too high, they're worried the job will be too easy for you, so you'll get bored and won't stay for a long time. And that I'm not making this up.
Yeah, and you'll excel.
I read this in a textbook.
Go to the next thing and the next thing. Why wouldn't they want that for you? You think that they'd want that for more people.
Yeah.
If anything, if I was a chief of police, which I never will be in my whole life.
Never know, maybe.
No, I don't want to be. But I'm saying if I was, I would hire that guy, and I would pay him double of what everyone else is getting paid to train all the rest of the officers to be like that,
yeah.
And then let him go and live on his life to move up to the next level, and hoping that those other people will do the same.
Yeah, that's what the FBI does.
Yeah. But,
all right, so we've got 3 minutes.
Man can dream.
And Sean's going to read us a poem. And if we have time, we'll play some Mozart.
All right, so we're going back to Alfred Lord Tennyson. This is one of the last poems from In Memoriam, the poem that I read, a poem of which, or an excerpt I read first in this broadcast. Another positive poem, it's called Ring Out, Wild Bells. Ring out, wild bells, to the wild sky, the flying cloud, the frosty light. The year is dying in the night. Ring out, wild bells, and let him die. Ring out the old, ring in the new. Ring, happy bells, across the snow. The year is going, let him go. Ring out the false, ring in the true. Ring out the grief that saps the mind. For those that hear, we see no more. Ring out the feud of rich and poor. Ring in redress to all mankind. Ring out a slowly dying cause and ancient forms of party strife. Ring in the nobler modes of life with sweeter manners, purer laws. Ring out the want, the care, the sing. The faithless coldness of the times. Ring out my mournful rhymes. but ring the fuller minstrel in. Ring out false pride in place and blood, the civic slander and the spite. Ring in the love of truth and right. Ring in the common love of good. Ring out old shapes of foul disease. Ring out the narrowing lust of gold. Ring out the thousand wars of old. Ring in the thousand years of peace. Ring in the valiant man and free, the larger heart, the kindlier hand. Ring out the darkness of the land. Ring in the Christ that is to be.